I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, you heard it. The Sports Reporters. We have assembled the first episode with Andrew Hammond. Now, a member, full-time, revealed member of the Detroit Free Press. He's still temporarily not in Detroit, up there in the Northwest. Andrew Hammond, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Just kind of chilling. the best way to put it, man. But no, everything's going good.
Up there in the Northeast, Robert Silverman of the Daily Beast. Robert, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Good afternoon to you, Chase Thomas. It's the afternoon here.
Well, I don't know. I don't know when I transition over. Until I've had my shower and gotten dressed for the day, it's still morning time for me.
Chase Thomas, for all you listening at home, is right now nude and smelly.
Yes.
It's really...
Didn't want to know that.
Well, to be fair, my ear is just throbbing. Like, what I'm dealing with, Bob, I don't think you were on the call before we got started, but, like, I am... Not 100% in the last few days, and I'm not 100%, but I am doing content for you guys. I didn't realize how much I would miss having normal ears, normal flow of audio to my ears until it was taken away from me in the last 2 days. It's driving me.
Saline solution, man.
You what?
Rinse that ish out with a saline solution.
What is that?
Okay. We'll discuss it off air. I'll be your Jewish mother when we're because no one else needs to hear that portion of the program.
You know what's funny, Bob? My grandfather asked about you when I was on my mom's side. I went back to Atlanta last weekend, unfortunately for the reason that my grandfather and my dad's side passed away. So that was tough. It was a tough weekend. But my mom's side, I saw them outside before I left. Next time I see them, I can do whatever, because they had gotten their second shot, but it hadn't been the full 2 weeks. So by the time I see them again, it'll have been the full 2 weeks since they had the second shot. But anyway, he was like, yeah, I'm all caught up. And there's that guy on that Friday show that you do, that New York guy. He's very opinionated and saying stuff. He's probably going to hear this as this. And it was just so funny because he stands out. you stand out to a multitude of people in my life, because I will have, he's not the only person who's asked me about Bob. Like, and I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, that guy, he is a character. He has a lot of personality. He is a, like, you stand out more than anybody else in this show.
Oh, well, thank your grandfather for me. That's very kind of him. Tell him my best, give him my best wishes. Mm-hmm. That's very, in return, I'll help deal with your ear issues.
Thank you.
That's like a fair trade.
Because this shit sucks, and it's driving me up the wall. Guys, there is some news. The NFL, you tweeted this out yesterday, Bob, that it turns out woke culture did not bankrupt the NFL. Explain to the listeners what happened with the new media deal.
Well, let's just say that the NFL recently extended their current media arrangement with a multitude of different providers, including Amazon.com, which will be the sole provider of Thursday Night Football. So that means unless you are in, say, the Jacksonville and Nashville markets, you will need an Amazon subscription to watch the Thursday Night Titans-Jaguars game that everyone is dying to get a hold of. But it's a ginormous investment in the rights to NFL football that begins in 2023, and it's going to last till 2033. And you know, this isn't notable because the NFL is still, it's the most watched programming in America, still. It has been, this has been the case for going on, I think, 3 decades that the NFL consistently draws a higher percentage of viewership than any other kind of programming. You know, I could be very wrong about, I don't know the ratings for the Oscars and the Grammys in the 90s. So check my facts on that one, everyone listening at home. But like, as sports properties go, the NFL has been the ratings king for a long time. That said, so there has been this a lot of very strange hand-wringing, particularly over the last, I'm going to say, 3 to 4 years about the NFL's ratings, ever since a certain quarterback decided to make an incredibly cautious protest of the national anthem. You might recall this. It's been in the news a bit. Every time there's a ratings dip in the NFL, there is a certain segment of the population, mainly in conservative media, who will start caterwauling from the top of the mountain that the NFL's politics are driving away fans, and particularly fans who like to watch on TV. Of course, this has always been patently ridiculous. Ratings for all TV shows have been going down steadily for many, many years. Pretty much every form of programming has seen a ratings decline. Like, the reason the NFL loses viewers, or, you know, hasn't actually lost that many viewers in the past couple of years, they've kind of remained pretty stagnant, is because everyone is. There are just a lot more ways to consume entertainment now. And so, yeah, that's why ratings are down. But they still attract a captive audience in a way that no other TV show on air, or, you know, show that you can get on your computer device, or your Xbox, or whatever the kids are using to watch the TV now, like, nobody gets a captive audience like sports. And no sports net league gets more audience than the NFL. So, of course, networks and, you know, Amazon are going to pay through the roof for the rights to broadcast it. It's very silly that NFL ratings have become a culture war football, not to mix the hell out of my metaphors, but it has. And I just think it's a weird, the idea that the NFL has any kind of political ethos other than the NFL should be paid more money is laughable. It's like laughably stupid. And yet some of the most stupidly laughable people in the conservative press have been banging that drum for a while now. So I took the opportunity yesterday to post a prediction by a guy by the name of Clay Travis, who I believe has a radio show in your neck of the woods. He was saying that there was a decline in ratings at some point early in September, and his catchphrase, which is heard everywhere if you track conservative media, "Get woke, go broke," Seems kind of silly now that the NFL has a $100 billion contract in place.
It's so just appointment television. Like, the NFL is always going to be king, mainly because it's appointment television where it's easy to follow. Like, it's once a week. Like, those kind of things. It's just, they've established themselves.
I've been for a while now, and this is an argument that I absolutely stole from Ethan Sherwood Strauss of The Athletic. Like, the smartest thing the NBA could do would be to create a similar set schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Like, games are Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, as you know, granted, they can't do what, you know, and so that everyone knows at what point the NBA game is on. Yes, you had it. You would probably, you know, you could definitely do two games a night. From someone on the East Coast to one on the West Coast, just like the NFL does. But if everyone knew exactly when it was time to turn on the TV for the NBA, I think it would really improve the size of audience.
Yeah, they just pop up with like Sunday afternoon games, like the Sunday return of them. It's just like people. I remember the first time I'm just like, what? Oh, I guess we're back at the Sunday night ESPN ABC.
Yeah, but nobody knew. But nobody knew because it just sort of happened. Like creating a set. It's like yes. And everyone knows when the NFL games are. The Thursday night game is absolutely bad for their players' long-term health, but it doesn't matter because everyone knows when the Thursday night game is. And so, like I quipped, you know, a couple of minutes ago, even if it is a Titans-Jaguars game, people are going to tune in and watch that.
Because it's just, it's fun. It's football.
You know, look, it's the kind of programming also where you can't digest it in either a recording or as easily in like clippable highlights that are parsed out on social media.
Yeah.
If you want to know who won the Super Bowl and you really actually want to watch the Super Bowl as to be able to just, as opposed to say, just posting memes or the cool highlights from the Super Bowl, you have to actually sit down at that time and watch it. And advertisers will pay through the nose for that.
Andrew, what do you think?
All right. So,
oh, I love when Andrew starts it with "All right." Whenever Andrew starts his,
you know, he's gearing up for a real scorcher.
I'm ready.
Okay, so here's the thing about the NFL. I've said this for the longest. You could put on a mediocre Cardinals Giants game. You could put that on in prime time in April or May on any network. And it will win the freaking night. Safe to say, you know, Bob is coming with a very, I'd say, measured and good cop approach to this. I'm going to go bad cop. And not necessarily crapping on the NFL or mainly this is to the, you know, conservative, like, oh, my God, the NFL ratings are struggling. You want to talk about struggling ratings? Look at the NHL. The NHL is struggling. And they did the smartest thing ever, which was get away from NBC Sports Network, which NBC Sports Network
went away, right?
Yeah, like it's going to be done by the end of the year, but it's like NBC Sports Network had a great approach to or a great idea of how they could, you know, get niche audiences, and then you'd think they'd build off of it. Well, they did this really cool, funny, and hilarious thing where they took, arguably, the third or fourth best sports property, which is the Premier League, and then they decided to put it on a freaking streaming network. Huh. That not great. Not great at all. So in terms of what the NFL does, the NFL's figured out we need to remain on the networks, which, kids, guess what? Putting actual sports on actual networks in linear TV, it works! What a concept! Like, not everything can be streaming or can be on a, you know, quote-unquote mobile network device, whatever you want to call it. You've still got to have linear television. And as much as, you know, the kind of double-dipping that NBC, ESPN, and ABC, or NBC, CBS and ESPN's, or basically Disney, are going to do is they're going to do both. They're going to put it on ESPN Plus, they're going to put it on Paramount Plus, you know, they're going to put it on Peacock, but you're also still going to get the traditional networks. What a concept. Like, basically everything the NFL is doing is like, oh man, they're really doing all this. Yeah, because it works. Like, why are ratings down for the NFL? Because there's 32 teams in the league and there's maybe two or three good games each week. Do I really want to watch, you know, 2 4-win teams in the month of November? No. So, like, what the NFL is doing is smart. They're establishing their brand, which they've done better than any league for the longest. And, which I think my favorite part about this is, they're going to flex Monday and Sunday night games now. Holy crap. Awesome. Like, it gives the opportunity for bigger games on Monday night because you need to grow the league. And they figure this out after Peyton Manning left, where it's like, you can't consistently be the face of the league when you're retired. And I figured out we need to get every asset and every player on every team some type of, one, exposure, two, let these guys have a national footprint. So it's working, and they've done a successful job at it. The only wonder that I have in terms of the entire TV package is how longer are you going to have that Thursday night game?
Because forever.
Well, I tend to agree. After a while, though, what's the point of a Thursday night game if, say, you know, we look 5-10 years from now? Like, the pandemic kind of sort of gave the NFL a reason to put games on Wednesday night and Tuesday night. And they saw, like, oh man, people are watching. Thursday? Meh. I have nobody to kind of sort of contend with on Thursday night. But
you got
Max
to contend with on Wednesday night, my friend.
Well, but the thing is, with Tuesday and Wednesday, I can absolutely dominate that night. Thursday, yeah. Everybody's kind of looking towards the weekend, but Tuesday and Wednesday, I guarantee you that's where it's going to hit. That's where
they can't do Friday because college or high school football has that. Like,
yeah,
there's some kind of rule. I remember because college football, people have asked that before, of like, why aren't there Friday games? I'm pretty sure it's a college or a high school reason.
Well, that, and I don't think that even the league wants to do a Friday night game. Mm-hmm. I think they want to keep Sunday and select Saturday games as their staple. Linear television still works, and streaming, like, they're basically doing the best of both worlds, which some conferences, i.e. the Big 12 and Pac-12, need to understand. You need to have a mix of both. If you want to be successful, you got to have a mix of both.
Bob, your response.
What? No, I agree. That's good. What? What?
I agree. That's good.
Ever.
I think we're too aligned on this podcast. I think the three of us are all, like, we have basically the same sort of.
Yeah, you guys need to bring in we need someone who's going to spice things up.
Mm-hmm.
We need a fourth wheel here.
Who's the fourth wheel? Who's going to stir the pot?
I think you need a QAnon adherent.
Okay.
I think you need someone.
No. No.
Balance the scales between the sensible leftist man of Andrew and the bomb throwing full bore communism that I espouse. You need, to make sure that all sides are heard.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. The conditions.
See if you can get the QAnon shaman. I think he has some time on his hands.
Yeah, no, I think I'm gonna pass. The conditions for the women's tournament versus the men's has become the forefront of the NCAA tournament this week. Probably not what the NCAA wanted, but maybe they should have thought about this before they had like one rack of weights for the women. This is insane. This is one of those things that would not have happened like 10 years ago because they just wouldn't have posted the photos and all that kind of stuff, and it's just like, whoa, this is wild. You just see the discrepancy, and you're just I think friend of the pod Sarah Kelly, who was on yesterday, tweeted out, she quote tweeted the picture side by side of like what the women got, like the swag versus what the men got, and just she made some sort of joke about like the way they did, like almost like Arrested Development of like, look at Banner, Michael, for their women's national title. It's just, it's so bad. And so just, what are you doing? Bob, what do you make of a classic whoopsie by the NCAA to not do the easy right thing here?
It's really funny to me. And like, there's a, I love when the free market essentialists like weigh in on the NCAA because, you know, they're like naturally like with a viral tweet like that, where it's so easy to be like, to realize that this is an unequal treatment. And the immediate critique that I saw all over the place, not to knock down a whole bunch of easy targets, was, well, they don't bring in nearly as much money as the men's teams do. Of course they're not going to get it. And I was like, true, women's sports do not make as much in earnings as men's sports. Unfortunately, they're both paid the same amount, which is nothing. So then, if your argument is, well, the men deserve better facilities and because they're earning more money for the school, then pay them a salary in exchange for their labor. Then you can have that kind of a conversation. It was another bad moment. Look, the NCAA as a cartel is just so routinely awful. This is just a particularly hilarious example of that. I mean, there is, oh God, we used to do this thing when I was at Evocative, RIP though.
That is a word I have not heard in a long time, Bob. I had forgotten about Evocative.
Evocative shut down 4 years ago this July, I'm going to say. It was either June 14th. No, it was June 14th.
Fuck.
A few days after the Warriors came back and won their comeback title, their first title.
So it's the Warriors' fault.
I remember it very clearly. Yeah, I blame Kevin Durant for this. I blame the Slim Reaper for the Evocative demise, but in any case, Evocative, we had a running blog feature. I would always, whenever a school would roll out its newest incredibly fancy locker room package or facilities package, we would write it up with a straight face. We would just write it up and just tout all of the amazing things that were available to their unpaid labor force as inducements and where that money and how much money was being spent instead of, say, on salaries for workers. So that was always a fun, easy, recurring blog bit we used to do. It's like, look, I honestly think that there will, you know, every time I think, well, okay, this is the final show that's going to actually, you know, force players to like band together and say like, sorry, you have to pay us or we're not going to do this free work for you anymore. The NCAA finds a way to kick down the road, a can down the road. There was a post by Luke Bonner, brother of former Toronto Raptor and San Antonio Spur, Matt Bonner, and a delightful Twitter follower in his own right. He played college ball. And he was saying, it's been a year now since the NCAA agreed to some kind of compensation for naming rights. And nobody's gotten any money yet. they will kick this can down the road in perpetuity. The shamelessness of the NCAA is really its one superpower. So, yeah, they're going to get dusted on the internet for a couple of days, but they don't care.
Andrew, what do you think?
So they should be embarrassed, and I sent out a tweet earlier today, and I was like, yeah, the NCAA should be embarrassed about it. It was like, oh, no, like the typical response of, oh, well, they don't care. They don't care. That's like, thank you, Captain Obvious. The only reason I say that they should be embarrassed is because literally they thought this was a great idea. We're going to give them a home gym that makes the gym at the Radisson Hotel look, you know, like a multi-million dollar facility. If you just operated men's sports and you put the same energy towards men's sports as you know, with women's sports, operate with the same energy for both and treat them no different. It works. Like, you will be fine. Like, I don't get this whole issue of, oh, well, we thought it was, you know, we... No, you're embarrassed because you got caught. Like, that's why you're embarrassed. But you should be absolutely embarrassed that you, especially the VP of women's college basketball, should absolutely be embarrassed, because there's no way in hell that you honestly thought this was a good idea. Especially when they want to go ahead and say, oh, well, we couldn't ship everything because, you know, we couldn't do as much as you know, for the men, because, well, the climate is different in Indianapolis than it is in San Antonio. Okay, yeah, your point? Like, what? You got caught. Just say you screwed up and actually consult with the athletes. Like, if you want to take as much pride in parading your student athletes, then give them a seat at the table. And this just furthers the argument that, one, they need to be getting compensated much more. Two, if you're going to, because I've covered the women's tournament before, and the difference between the men's tournament and the women's tournament in terms of NCAA, and I kind of tweeted this in a mini thread last night, like the difference between how each of them operate and how, you know, as much care is put into X, Y, and Z, it's day and night. It is truly, like, the NCAA, if, like, I don't know if you guys have ever covered the NCAA tournament for the men's side, but there's this thing with Powerade Cups. Basically, you can't have a, you know, you can't have like a Coke bottle or you can't have like a Sprite bottle on press row. It's got to be in an NCAA sanctioned cup. And you've seen it happens every year on the timeline. You'll see people at the NCAA tournament, you know, saying, oh, well, cup police got me or something like that. With the women's tournament, I thought it was the same thing. Walked out with a Sprite bottle. Nobody said a word to me. And you're supposed to have NCAA people at these different sites. Just the care and the care and effort that goes into the men's tournament, it's honestly actually very impressive, and they do a good job with it. But keep the same energy for the women's tournament. Like, it's really that simple, and it's just, it's ineptitude, and it's run by people who, one, yes, they're money hungry, everybody knows that, but also, you've got to have people who actually are participating in the events, give them some feedback. Like, players, they always send out a survey every year, and clearly, these surveys aren't working, but actually get input from the players. It would go such a long way in making sure that not only fans, spectators, media, like all of that, like it would work. Like it just people making complicated crap is very frustrating, especially when it comes to the NCAA.
Yeah, be better. That is my advice to the NCAA. Just be better. Do the right thing. Just if your instinct, I also just think they need to be at this point like, what is your gut instinct, Mark Emmert? Okay, do the other thing. Whatever your gut instinct is telling you, don't do that thing.
But where is he at in this? Like, seriously, you had them kicking the can down the road on a college football season, which that is still a mess because you've got one division already done another
division.
Have
they decided
playing.
Like how this is going to work with FCS next year? Like, are they playing
in
the fall?
I don't know. I think everybody is playing in the fall. So it's just like, wait a minute. So you're going to basically everybody gets a free year.
Mm-hmm. Which messes up scholarship stuff. That is, I've heard from other coaches and stuff. This is a mess. This is going to be a problem.
It's going to be a problem. And so like you kick the can down the road and yes, I understand you want to delegate it to the selected conferences, which I completely understand, but at the same time, you've got to get a pair of balls. Like, if Mark Emmert was smart, should have done, you know, hey, we're going to do, you know, we're going to start the season in late September or early October, just so we can get some parameters put down, because conferences were doing their own thing. And yeah, like nobody knows what they're doing because the people up top are just like, oh, well, they'll take care of it themselves, because just ineptitude across the board at the NCAA. Nobody actually in charge. Well, there's one person in charge, but when he's delegating responsibility to everybody, it just looks like a freaking mess.
Yeah. Well, It is probably going to stay a mess, guys. Andrew, what is your pick of the week? What have you watched or what have you read? What would you like to recommend to our listeners this week?
NCAA tournament, both men's and women's. Watch it. Enjoy it. We didn't have it last year, so...
Did you see the March Madness people fuck up the meme? Did you see this? The Wolverine meme?
I did see that.
Incredible.
Just
how do you do,
Jesus Christ?
How do you do, fellow kids? I love it. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of basketball this weekend, and it's going to be fun to see Tennessee run the gauntlet. I think that's a really cool thing that everybody gets to be treated to. I'm excited for it. Fulkerson, the return from a brutal borderline just all time. Like, I think he deserves a permanent ban from basketball ever. The Florida big who double elbowed Folky. So
yeah, that was a nasty elbow.
It was. Folky didn't do anything wrong. He was out here just doing his job, gritting and grinding.
You know, I'm excited about for the NCAA tournament.
Are you?
I'm not nearly as much of a college basketball fan as you guys. I will watch because I'm a sports.
You're more of a college football guy. So, you love the SEC, Bob.
I do. I am. I am on Rocky Top. That's
yes.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Patrick Ewing is doing well. It's very hard to root for Georgetown as an institution because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not as someone who watched a lot of Big East basketball many years ago when it was a thing. It was, you know, Georgetown winning all the time was kind of annoying. So I can't root for like overdog Georgetown or, you know, the kind of person who graduates from Georgetown. But Patrick Ewing being their coach makes
them
lovable.
What did they do
and,
to you? The Hoyas just really curb-stopping the Hoyas.
It's my anti-Jesuit bias, really.
Okay.
That's what it's all about. It's my pure anti-Jesuit bigotry.
This is why my grandfather asked me about you, Bob. Like, you go on these diatribes about anti-Georgetown, and he's just like, what was he talking about then? Georgetown stuff. This is the bits right here. This is the classics.
You got to understand, like, look, there are the Big East documentary that ESPN did is really great. But Georgetown were the bullies and they bullied everyone. And there are a lot of very, like, the racial lines that Georgetown fandom caused are, to me, fascinating, because it is a school that has produced some absolute monsters in U.S. politics, and yet John Thompson was a pioneer in terms of fighting for civil rights and was an outspoken critique of, like, the rampant racism that exists in college basketball. So,
you know, go ahead, Bob. Go ahead.
Georgetown is a land of contrast. But yeah, I'm very happy that Patrick Ewing is getting a cool ride. That, to me, is extremely fun. Go ahead, Andrew. Take it.
The thing about Georgetown is, for a lot of us, I know for me, like for black people, like Georgetown and Temple were the two schools that you're like, wait a minute, are those like black schools? And you're like, no, like it's just how they captured the culture and they captured the African community with two coaches of color, John Chaney and John Thompson. How they captured the city first, but then it became national. And so just watching all of that kind of transpire, especially in the 90s, and of course, you know, Bob, like you said, in the 80s, having that exposure, like, wow, like, I mean, they were wearing kente cloth on the uniforms.
Yeah.
which, you know, not many schools, like, nobody was doing that. And Nike, you know, there was a story, I don't know if it was in Grantland or the Ringer, but basically talking about how that was developed. And
Allen Iverson went to Georgetown. People forget that, but he did.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just watching just, you know, the fact that Patrick Ewing did that in Madison Square Garden, you know, where he's won before as a college player and as a pro. Like, it was such a special moment. And, yeah, no, Georgetown, it's good when Georgetown is, you know, is on top and is thriving, because it makes the game better. It absolutely makes the game better. And so, like, I wasn't like emotional, but I was very happy and very pleased to see them thriving. And the only thing I'm upset about in terms of like the tournament and all that, Georgetown's automatic bid didn't kick Syracuse out, because seriously, what is Syracuse doing in the field of 68?
Jim Boeheim, overrated fraud. I'm off.
You know, and
an overrated driver too.
Okay, come on. Okay, pal. Enough. Good Lord, what is wrong with you?
Let me just say, to point to the contrast to Georgetown, it's like famous Georgetown alumni who didn't play on the basketball team include General Alexander Haig, Donald Rumsfeld, who else? I can't think of any. I know Haig and Rumsfeld. Shoot, don't make me freaking Google this.
Well, hey, Bob, if you want to Google this, I do have some breaking news from the Big East.
Sure.
Marquette has parted ways, a.k.a. fired Steve Wojciechowski.
Oh, man. Former Duke staffer, right?
Honestly,
former hated Dukie.
Yeah, like, people want to talk about Grayson Allen, J.J. Redick, Greg Paulus.
Bryce Drew is the head coach at some university that I can't recall right now.
Grand Canyon. He is at Grand Canyon right now.
Right.
Yeah, I Woj, well, Wojo being let go at Marquette is kind of shocking.
Christian Nielsen. George Tenet. John Podesta, Mick Mulvaney, all of these people are just monsters.
Did you mention Bill Clinton?
Clinton, yeah, I went to Georgetown Law.
Yeah.
Just awful, awful garbage people who should be.
Did you say John Mulvaney?
Buried
John Mulvaney?
What?
No, Mick Mulvaney.
Oh, okay.
Mick Mulvaney. Okay. Mulvaney, not John, not beloved stand-up comic John Mulvaney.
Okay. He also went to Georgetown. That's why I looked it up. Did you know he went to Georgetown?
I thought he went to Northwestern.
No, it says here, yeah. Georgetown.
Dang. Yeah, like, Georgetown is a breeding ground for all of, like, the entire D.C., like, lawyer lobbyist class, which is why it was so fascinating to see that they became such an incredibly important part, like, cultural school, like, why the basketball program did enter the cultural lexicon to the degree that it did. And, you know, it can, I, like, it was weird. When I was a kid, I was rooting for Big East schools. I just rooted for the garbage schools. I made bad choices. I rooted for, like, St. John's and...
St. John's wasn't a garbage school.
And Villanova and also, like, Syracuse. It was just terrible stuff.
All right. Well, we'll have to end here, guys. Bob, what can we check out from you this week at the Daily Beast?
Nothing new this week. Working on some stories. Hopefully should be finished, for the love of God, soon. But you can always find me on Twitter at Bob Saeta. And yeah, that's it.
And
my DMs are open. So if you like, if you or any of your grandparents want to drop me a message, I'm always open.
I love it. And it's not just my grandparents, friends. They're just like, you're the most asked about of all the people on this podcast. It's just funny to me.
Where did you find that guy?
Yeah.
Out in the dumpster.
I just describe you. I'm like, he's like Jerry Stiller 40 years earlier.
That's awesome. I'm gonna ride the high of that compliment all weekend.
Yeah, it's a compliment. I love Jerry Stiller. Andrew, what can we check out from you this week at the Detroit Free Press?
NCAA tournament coverage, Tigers, NFL free agency still going on.
I don't think you should be advocating for Lions and Tigers.
Well,
the Lions just signed Brett Perriman's kid. So, you know.
I will say this. The Lions, they are trying to definitely put something together. In terms of free agency, there is we need to address X amount of areas, you know, save some money in some places. Unlike the Chicago Bears, which basically kind of sort of teased the fact that, we're going to try and put a package together for Russell Wilson and or Deshaun Watson. How's that working out?
Well, hold on. This is one thing I don't understand on this line of thinking. It's like they can't just force these two teams to trade for him. Like, I mean, I don't really know what they're supposed to do if both Seattle and Houston are like, still no. And also, Andy Dalton's the best quarterback Chicago's had in, what, 20-something years? Like, we
Chase
talk about
Andy Dalton. Chase, the bar is hell. Chase, the bar is hell.
I know. I'm not disagreeing with
that. They got one good season out of Cutler. Cutler was good for a year. That one good Jay Cutler year was definitely better than
but
whatever
we talk about, called. Like, Andy Dalton, like, he is not, like, well, an immediate no, upgrade well, over these
no,
two.
No, he's not. I'm not saying he's not an upgrade, but when... And you are basically putting things out there. When you're basically
just like hunted on Fuller for reasons that nobody can seem to understand.
Yeah. Aside from and that. Like, that is... That deserves even more scrutiny. But, yeah, no, it was like, Russell Wilson isn't happy. Deshaun Watson isn't happy. And... The Bears openly like, well, you know, if we can make a deal, or if we can, you know, put together the right trade package, basically just feeding these myths, not feeding these myths, but basically just kind of feeding this propaganda to a fan base that is absolutely thirsty for a quarterback.
They're mad. They are mad online. They are so mad about not to go full super fans, but they are very mad about the Bears right now. And as someone who has rooted for all kinds of awful teams, and I'm just like, I feel a certain degree of sympathy for Bears fans. They are mad online right now. If you see a Bears fan on the internet, don't say anything rude to them, because they'll just go off.
I have a few Bears fans on my phone, and I have not said a word because, one, you know, who cares? two, like, we kind of, like, as soon as we started seeing the Photoshops of Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson in Bears jerseys,
As a veteran of, say, the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Zion Williamson, Knicks Photoshops, once the clutch points imagery starts popping up, you know your team is in very bad shape.
Yes.
Someone, by the way, I would really love a long-form article on whoever is responsible for clutch points is absolutely gonzo.
Sean Hyken's going to do that whenever he gets the opportunity. I'm going to guess Sean Hyken
I really
locked in.
Hyken, as a chronicler of, like, weird socialist Celtics Twitter, that feels very much like something that's up his beat. Like, I want to know what the artistic process is for some of the absolutely deranged imagery Clutch Points puts out into the world.
But that shit is delightful. All right. Well, that's it for us, the sports reporters. We're all sports reporters again because Andrew is at the Detroit Free Press where he's an assistant sports editor. We have Bob up there covering sports. Sports are going up there in the Northeast. Guys, thank you as always for the time, and we'll be back next week. All right, we're back. The Atlanta Sports Guys were reconvened on this Friday afternoon where I am using just one of my ears to listen to the nonsense about Trae Young's importance to the Atlanta Hawks and the 7-game win streak and not trading John Collins, and everything is coming up Atlanta. Atlanta Hawks, that is. It is my fellow Atlanta Sports Guys, Garrett Chapman down there in Atlanta, and Max Markovich. Guys, how are you doing?
We're good. Good. Yeah. It's a beautiful day down here. I'm excited to get outside. I love it.
It's not like that in Knoxville.
I thought this was an exclusive Nathan Knight appreciation podcast, man.
He's so good. Nathan Knight in that dunk last night was very, very rude.
Ooh. No, that took me to a different place, man. That dunk was incredible. Unbelievable.
I don't know what to think about this. He came out of nowhere. Nathan Knight, it also just, let's get Bruno Fernando out of here. Like, he should never step on the court ever again.
Oh,
like,
never again.
I can't handle it anymore. He's out of here. Nathan Knight just, he's so funny. I don't know who he reminds me of. Like, maybe a little Rayshon Holmes. I don't know. Like, who does he remind you guys of?
I don't know, but if Onyeka Okongwu was doing what Nathan Knight is doing, we'd be freaking out. That's all I'm saying.
He's just like an afterthought in my mind now. Like, he is just someone that this is a write off for him. We have to talk about the Hawks, guys. They've won 7 straight, still undefeated since Nate McMillan took over. What do we think about the job? And have you noticed, Max, we'll start with you. Have you noticed any, like, when you're watching these games and you're just ingesting everything that's going on here, have you really noticed a way in which they're playing differently, noticeably different than the way they play with Lloyd Pierce? Is there anything specific that you can pinpoint?
I mean, the most specific and most obvious point to make is the fourth quarter performance, which I don't know how much to credit to Nate McMillan, but, like, it doesn't hurt that they are now one of the best fourth quarter teams in the league after being one of the worst for Lloyd Pierce's tenure. I don't know. I'm trying not to get too high, just like I was trying not to get too low when they weren't playing well, because to me, it's still just about health and about all the moving pieces and trying to get everyone up to speed together. And Bogey's been back, and he was really good last night, and that's really good. And DeAndre Hunter's coming back, and that's really good. They've beat up on some really bad teams, which I think is worth pointing out. Some really bad teams and some really shorthanded teams, but it's hard to... I don't know. It's hard to nitpick 7 straight wins, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, 7 wins are 7 wins, you know? I mean, it's still the NBA, and you still got to go out there and perform. But, yeah, like you said, Max, I mean, like, it's not like we're the Hawks went out and beat the Clippers or the Lakers or something like that. I mean, they'll have their opportunity. I think those are the next 2 games that they have. But, I mean, look, you got to play the schedule that's given to you, and that's what they've been doing, and they've been doing really well. But to your question, I don't know if anything's necessarily different. I think the team looks like it's playing with more confidence. I mean, I think that's probably the best thing that I could say about it. I don't know about if Nate McMillan is actually doing anything tangibly different. The team just looks better. That's all I can really say. I don't think he's fundamentally doing anything different, but I don't know. The results are there, and that's all I care about.
That being said, the schedule is about to get really bad for the Hawks. We're about to learn a lot about the Atlanta Hawks in the next few weeks, because they will be at Los Angeles, both LA teams, at Lakers, at Clippers, at Sacramento, at Golden State, at Denver, at Phoenix, at San Antonio, at Pelicans, before coming back to Golden State. Like, this is just going to be a really brutal, brutal week. And this is the kind of stretch where you're like, I just want to go like 4-6. Like, I want to go 5-5, best case scenario. Garrett, how concerned are you about the schedule?
I don't think concerned is the right word. I'm very eager. I'm excited to see what the actual Hawks team. I mean, like, this is where we're going to really see who they are. And it's going to be tough. We had Nate McMillan on, I think, 2 days ago in 99, and he said that this is by far and away the longest road trip he's ever been on. And this guy's coached how many hundreds and hundreds of basketball games? I mean, this is an absurd road trip. 8 consecutive games. It's not even the fact that they're 8 road games. It's 8 road games on the West Coast against some of the teams with the best record in the NBA. I mean, my God. So I'm not concerned. I'm more eager. I just want to see what this Hawks team can do. And look, if we can pull out 4 wins, I think that's incredible. And I think the Hawks are now 5th in the East. I don't think that there are any other teams here in the Eastern Conference who are really going to pass us per se. So we just got to get through it. It's just one of those stretches. I mean, like I said before, it's the NBA. You got to do what you got to do. And I think we're about to learn a lot about the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, I am. I'll just be clear. I'm not as optimistic about this stretch. I'm a little concerned that they're going to come down to earth. I don't think they're going to be in that middle tier. I think we're going to be closer to the play-in game once this all settles and once more of the schedule unfolds. I don't know. I think there are going to be new questions about the rotation when Hunter comes back and Chris Dunn is apparently inching closer, fingers crossed, on that one. Reddish looks like he's going to be out for a while. That doesn't sound good with his Achilles stuff. I don't know. I think there's going to be more questions about the rotation, more questions about getting certain guys like Capella will be back. And I don't know. I'm fascinated to see how Nate McMillan juggles all of this. But does it seem like Gallo and Bogey are turning the corner? Two important summer signings for the Hawks. I guess, well, winter because of when the season started, but off-season signings. Max, what do you make of Gallo during this stretch and Bogey?
Yeah, I just want to circle back quickly to the schedule, and then I'll touch on Gallo and Bogey. I think it's actually an opportunity, because to me, if they go 500, if they go 5-5 in the next 10, that almost tells you more about who they are as a team than when they won 7 in a row against, you know, the Rockets and whoever. It's an opportunity to say, you know, if we can tread water against the best teams in the league on the road during a 10-game road stretch, that tells you more about the Hawks. And so in that sense, I'm pretty excited just to see. On Gallo and Bogey, I think had we exercised a little bit of patience, we could have definitely seen this coming. I mean, these are really much more indicative of who these two players are and why the Hawks signed them. And, you know, we can quibble with, like, the decisions to sign them, and I'm sure we will. But these are the players you're getting when you sign them. And so those are still, like, very impactful, important players to a team that was one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league last year. And we kind of gloss over that, but it's really important. Those are two elite shooters added to a team that couldn't make threes last year, and that was, like, one of the biggest Achilles heels. I think it's encouraging, and I think we also still gloss over a little bit the fact that they have done this and gone through a significant portion of their season without probably their second most important player, who will be back soon. And so, as you can probably sense, I'm a little more optimistic than Chase is about all this. But I'm definitely excited for this next stretch to see how real all of it is.
Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see what they look like. I want to see what this team is really built around and, like, what a really pretty healthy Atlanta Hawks, looks like. But this is, I mean, without Hunter and Reddish apart, this is, it's just kind of weird. And Tony Snell just being as important as he is. I think all three of us can at least agree that Tony Snell just, I don't even know what word to describe
period.
Him as.
Tony Snell, period.
Yeah, just Tony Snell. The BlackBerry savior that none of us thought would come about. Like, he's just good. He's got really good chemistry with Collins. He does his role. Like, the cardio king is just, he's just a really solid player and is a fixture in our rotation now, and is an important cog to keeping this thing rolling. Garrett, what is the best thing you can say about Tony Snell's play with this group in the starting lineup since he got inserted?
Well, I mean, he's leading the league in three-point shooting. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, he's on pace for an NBA record in terms of three-point percentage. I mean, I think the old record was like Kyle Korver at like 53% or something like that. This guy's shooting almost 57% from three. I mean, that speaks for itself. And I mean, honestly, I don't know how you take him out of the starting lineup. I mean, even DeAndre Hunter's going to come back. I mean, how is he going to distribute these minutes? The rotation is just going to be incredible. I don't know. It's a great problem to have. But I mean, Tony Snell playing at this level, Bogey looks like he's coming back. Gallinari's playing better. I mean, I don't know how Nate McMillan's going to feed all of these mouths, but I mean, man, oh man, I mean, it's a great problem to have. But Tony Snell, I mean, I don't know how you take him out of the starting lineup. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, DeAndre Hunter is incredible, and he probably needs to be a starter. But I mean, Tony Snell, that's all I got to say.
Max, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, it's like, Chase, you were talking about the rotation as like this problem that they have to figure out. It's a really good problem. They have not had this many good NBA players in years. I mean, it's been like, you know,
ever.
you're trying to decide how you can take Tony Snell out of the lineup, which like I think that these problems tend to, quote unquote problems, tend to sort themselves out. Like you can bring DeAndre Hunter off the bench at the beginning to sort of ease him back. He has to start when he's fully healthy, obviously. You can bring Bogdanovich, Gallinari, any of those guys off the bench, and like they're fine. They'll still play big minutes. They'll still, you know, get their shots. All of that.
See, I pull Herter. Yeah, I would pull Herter. He's the one I would pull out of the starting lineup.
Herter's the forgotten guy. It's like I almost wish he could go elsewhere to kind of flourish. I really like him. I just really like his game and all of that. But I don't know like where he fits in here in the long term. Maybe
I mean, he doesn't. He's just not one of the guys that can pay. Like, it's just, unless he took like an unreal discount, just, like there's no avenue to keeping Kevin Herter. Like, he's just not going to get, it's just, there's no avenue. Like, I don't understand how you can keep, like, this is what Schlink has to worry about, especially when you pay Gallo and certain guys. It's like, no, if you're going to give Trey the max and you have Capella locked in, you have Gallo locked in, you're going to have to pay DeAndre Hunter. It's just,
Eventual max for Nathan Knight, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Can't rule that out. Got to go ahead and pencil that one in. Yeah, no, Kevin Herter is just not someone I expect them to keep around.
But he's quietly having a very, his past couple games.
Yeah, he's good.
He's been just wildly consistent.
The floater king.
I'm just looking it up. Yeah, he's, I mean, 12.7 points. He's looking like he's solid. 41 from the field, 32 from three. 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists. I mean, 1.5 steals. I mean, that's just perfect for a role player.
Exactly.
I mean, considering what is he, the fourth option on for the scoring option, and he's averaging 12.5 points. That's really good. That's
he doesn't
really
demand
good.
The
and
ball.
It's indicative
like
of the success of the Hawks.
He's sneaky on cuts. He's sneaky on the way he's able to. Like, when I say floaters, like, his bread and butter is like he goes home after a tough day at the office, and he's like, let me watch CJ McCollum for 3.5 hours, and then he's like, let me do like a third of what McCollum does, and that's my game.
But like teams don't expect him to be able to do that, and then
yeah, no, it's
can.
Always one
like
off
he,
like he comes off these curls and he like leans in, like it's just he shoots the exact same way everywhere, but no, it works for him.
No, he's playing good basketball.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it's a credit to Nate McMillan too, because he's kept him in the starting lineup. I mean, Bogdan was signed to be a starter. He was signed to be that guy, and now that he's off the minutes restriction, he kept Kevin Herter in there because he's playing good basketball. And I think that's a credit to Nate McMillan. I mean, he's playing the hot hand, and he's done a really good job with it. So, I mean,
I don't think you can really go wrong as long as it's – I mean, people are playing a pretty even distribution of minutes. I mean, I think the past couple of games, I think only a handful of people have actually gone over 30 minutes. And I think it was Trey, like, once or twice, because everyone's just playing good basketball. And I think this is great. Like Max and I were saying, it's a great problem to have.
That's fair. That's
we have not mentioned John Collins' name one time, and I feel like that's malpractice.
Hold on. Like, I think you and like that's the main event of the Hawks conversation, guys.
I wasn't sure.
The John Collins aspect of all of this, because we have been texting back and forth all week about what's ultimately going to happen. Maybe it's just just clairvoyant Chase has logged into the chat, guys. And restrictive free agent guys, they don't go well. When you let a player that believes he is a cornerstone piece get to this point in the summer, we've seen it time and time again. Like, remember how pissed off Gordon Hayward was when the Jazz let him go searching, and then he went to Charlotte at that point and got the offer sheet and the Jazz match and all that, but it was never the same, and then he ended up leaving. I think the relationship's over. Like, John Collins, like, not paying him and not getting it done before the season, it's over. And he is not someone who you can pay. It is GM malpractice to pay him, Gallinari, and Capella just an absurd amount of money. You can't do it. It's just not the way you team build in 2021. It's just bad. I would also just, let me check my notes here, not trade Luka Doncic. But also, Collins is good. Collins is good, and he's playing really well at the five. Like, that's been one of the bigger things for him as of late. Without Capella, he's playing well. He's shooting well. He does a lot of good stuff. He helps basketball teams. Like, he does a lot of important things down low. His shot's improved. His playmaking is improved. He's not the playmaker that he thinks he is, but you know, he's really good at lobs. He has really good chemistry with Tony Snell coming off those coming off screens there, and he's just a really difficult guy to handle inside. And him and Trey have no chemistry whatsoever. That it's no, like, I remember I took notes in the first quarter, I guess this was maybe the Rockets game or the game before it, I think it was the game before it, where Trey's only like, all Trey did was he drew three fouls, the three pesky fouls that are just going to drive people insane for the foreseeable future in the NBA. And Tony Snell had like three different lobs to Collins, and the way Collins was getting the ball was from Herter or from Snell or from literally anybody other than Trey. And it was just something interesting. They do their own thing. They play two different, it's like they're on the court together, but they pretend the other doesn't exist from a basketball standpoint.
I don't know, man. That Trey Young had a pretty nice, what was he, threw the ball up off the glass last night to John Collins?
Mm-hmm. Well, to be fair, he thought it was Nathan Knight, and then he was immediately disgruntled that it was the wrong guy.
Oh, man.
Nathan Knight, like, he prefers to dunk on people. I think that's his preference.
Well, so does Collins. Collins is not afraid to dunk on people with lobs. But I don't know. I just think, like you guys said, they're playing too well. It's not like they're going to trade him. There's interest and stuff like that, but he's an RFA. He didn't get the money offered to him that he wanted from the Hawks. We know the stuff behind the scenes with Trey is not great. There's no recipe for this to end well, and they're going to end up losing the Collins stuff because I guess the hope is a trade exception, and they do what Boston did with Gordon Hayward this past offseason. But like, there's just no way this ends well because you can't trade him, and then you're not going to match whatever he gets in the open market. And then it's like, well, what do we do here? How did this happen in over a year stretch? Garrett, make the case for John Collins. And does any of that make sense?
I mean, I think he does have chemistry with Trae Young. I disagree. I think they played really well together. I mean, they look good on the court together. They play good basketball. But they could still go out and sign him once the season ends. I mean, I don't think that's everyone like kind of like written that off as like as not a possibility. I mean, John Collins could still have interest in playing here in Atlanta. And what if he comes down? What if he comes down and accepts what they offered preseason, which I think it was like 3 years, 90-95 million. I mean, he could come down and accept that if he wants to win basketball games here in Atlanta and be a part of the growth that we've seen. I mean, this is a much better Hawks team. This isn't the team that drafted him with that 17th pick and then proceeded to royally suck for the foreseeable future. this is a different team. And honestly, I mean, but cuts are going to have to be made somewhere. We talked about this with Kevin Herter. You're not going to be able to feed everybody. Not everybody's going to get these large, extravagant contracts. And if he wants that, then he would probably have to go elsewhere, because he's not going to get a max contract here from Atlanta. I don't see that happening. I don't see that. I just don't think the Hawks have the money. I know you have bird rights and everything like that, so they could theoretically go over, but I just don't see him as a guy who's worth a max contract, but somebody might. And if somebody's willing to pay him that, then he's gone. Because I don't think the Hawks are going to pony that kind of money up. But he's still a good basketball player. I'm excited that he's going to be on this team. I mean, he's averaging 20 points a game. He's been a 20-10 guy just about his entire career here in Atlanta. And now he's shooting 35-40% from three. I mean, he's a critical like piece of this team, and I think he's going to be a reason why we make the playoff run. And hopefully that's part of their pitch to him this offseason, and he sticks around. But I don't know. It all depends on the money. That's what I think it comes down to, and I just don't know if the Hawks are ready to pony up.
Max, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd like to make a more formidable case, to be honest. We're talking about the Hawks as if they're like completely cap strapped, which they kind of are, but it's not really. I don't think it's as entrenched as we're making it out to be. And so, if you consider like Capella and Gallinari after this year will have two more years on their deal each at about between 15 and 20 million, I think, for each of them. That's not like, you know, some crazy deal that you can't get off of at some point, especially when they're expiring contracts. Trey, which doesn't begin until, I don't know, do the math, the final year of those deals, I guess. If you believe your core is Trey Young, DeAndre Hunter, and John Collins, which you can make a case that that's a really good core that you want to stick with, you can do that. You can completely do that, and you can replace eventually what Capella gives you. You can replace you can definitely replace eventually what Gallinari gives you, and you can make that work. It's clear based on their past actions that before this season, they were not sold on that being the core three, for whatever reason. And we don't know. We'd have to ask Travis Link. Whether that's changed this year or not, I don't know. We can say for certain. So I'm not going to rule out. For one, you can't trade him right now. You just can't do that. This team's playing too well. You can't do that. You could. Your options are sign and trade him after the year, match an offer that comes in. We don't know what offer that'll be. Or let him walk. I think letting him walk would be really stupid for obvious reasons. But I don't think it's crazy to say that you just want to roll with those three as your core. Pay Trey, eventually pay DeAndre, pay Collins, and fill out the roster from there.
Whoa! Reddish out of your core already.
Well, right now he kind of has to be, right?
Oh, yeah, come on.
I mean... It's no mistake. I mean,
y'all are hurting my feelings. Y'all are hurting my feelings. I can't handle this.
We win seven games in a row, man.
We can't even discuss DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish in the same sentence anymore.
No.
Like, they're not in the same stratosphere.
Well, now the fear of mine is they're playing too well, and the vets are just, like, you're going to have to reinsert Cam into an important part of this rotation. Like, the wins have to be sacrificed a little bit, and they're going to have five-man units that just get beat and are minus four, and you can't when you're in a playoff chase. So, like, Cam is actually going to get fizzled out just because they can't afford to lose those 12 minutes of him being on the floor. Like, they just can't.
I mean, can you justify playing Cam over Tony Snell right now? Whenever he comes back?
I think, like, once you signed everybody you signed, you can't. But before this season, yes. Before the season, playoff expectations, before the signings, before they just went all in on making the playoffs this year, yes, you absolutely could. Now, no, you've chosen a path. You've chosen a path that, like, we're expediting this rebuild. We are throwing our hands up, admitting that we cannot develop all four of these guys, and someone's going to have to be the fall guy. And I think you guys are right. Like, Cam appears to be the fall guy here. But they deserve a big F and big F in developing the most talented player, because he has the most amount of skills, the most amount of upside of anyone in this group, and him not turning out to be a really great player it falls on them. But I just don't think they're going to, the timelines no longer match in a way that's going to be fruitful. And this was my biggest concern going into the year of these signings. I'm like, man, I just would do another full year of Trey, Collins, Capella, Hunter, and Reddish just getting a shit ton of minutes together. And even if you lose a lot, at least then you learn what you have. Because look at Anthony Edwards. Like, he was awful. Awful the first part of the season. Now he's shooting like 50% from three since after the All-Star break, and he's really breaking out. I'm not saying he would be Anthony Edwards, but there is something to just how fucking awful Minnesota was by playing a bunch of young guys and let it, like, just throwing them out there. And Anthony Edwards is figuring it out, and that's part of young guys' development in this league, is like you just have to play them a bunch of minutes and they either sink or swim for a lot of these lottery guys. Steph was turning the ball over an unreal amount when he was taking over for Jared Jack and Monte Ellis, and that was a concern, but then it suddenly wasn't because he figured it out. I don't think Cam will ever get the opportunity in Atlanta to figure it out and to fail over and over and over again for a 9-month stretch before he hopefully figures it out. And that's a shame, because Schlenk did him wrong. It looks like the development staff did him wrong, and I will not forgive them. I've checked my notes here. I will not forgive them for stunting and ruining my Cam Reddish pipe dream of being the next Paul George.
But can we talk about another part of these guys' development, which mm-hmm. is that when you can win, like, how valuable would playoff minutes be for DeAndre Hunter this year? Like,
yeah.
Like, so valuable. Like, and if you're going to give them an F for Cam Reddish, which I think where the blame should lie.
Premature. I don't know. I still think it's premature.
Yeah, but if you're going to give them an F for Cam Reddish, then you give them an A for DeAndre Hunter, right?
Yes.
And if you hit on one of those two guys as an elite 3-and-D, two-way wings in the NBA, you have done your job in that draft. Like hitting on one out of the two is a win, period. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if, like, you know, if Cam Reddish, like, will ever work out, but I also don't think the Hawks should sacrifice any part of a season that looks like it could, like, they could be the 4 seed, like, they could be the 5 seed, whatever. And if you can do that, you do that, period. And if getting Bogdanovich and Gallinari sort of compromises a year and a half of development that has shown mostly not much from Cam Reddish, and you can make the playoffs, you do it. And I think that's another card, like, another side of this development is, like, you can make the playoffs, Trae Young and DeAndre Hunter in a playoff series. That's so, so valuable.
That's fair.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, I still think he could be a good player. I mean, he may not be Paul George, but it's okay, because like Max said, we could have drafted a Kawhi Leonard. Like, this guy, DeAndre Hunter, is an animal. He can guard, he can do everything. And I mean, we've said it time and time again, this guy's really damn good. And I agree tenfold with him. And they're like, look, if you can get one guy out of that draft that turns into an all-star, if you won, that's really all that matters. And I'm not quite ready to give up on Cam Reddish, and I still think he can play like a decent amount of minutes and still develop. Maybe he's trade bait or something down the line. He could still be of use to the Hawks somehow, because that talent, he does lose that talent. Maybe he just needs a different situation. But I don't know, man. I'm not 100% ready to give up on him, but he has been extremely frustrating to watch, I will admit.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Falcons quickly, guys. The Falcons doing some stuff. Matt Ryan restructures this contract. There's been some discourse about whether or not this means that they are now out of taking a quarterback at number 4, or this is not what they are going to end up doing. Alex Mack signed with the 49ers, reuniting with Kyle Shanahan. The Falcons signed a safety, as we expected, because they did not have one after moving on from everybody, and Eric Harris. Let's talk about the Matt Ryan restructure. What do we make of what this signals for Terry Fontenot and Kyle Smith in this front office, that where their heads at for Matt Ryan in the next couple years of Falcons football, Garrett?
Well, I mean, they're committing to Matt Ryan. I mean, at least next year and the year after that. I mean, look, this dead cap money, I think it went from, here, let me see, it went from $26.5 million next year to $40.5 million, just in dead cap. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, and they just keep kicking the can down the road. And I think Terry Fontenot didn't want to do this. I think I saw a report about that. But, I mean, he kind of had to, because that was like kind of the last-ditch effort of saying, hey, if we're going to get under the cap, it has to happen this way. Some people are disagreeing. Some people say that this signals that the Atlanta Falcons aren't going to draft a quarterback with that fourth pick. Some people argue the complete opposite. They say, well, this doesn't mean anything. They could still draft a quarterback. But you guys know where I stand on that. I still think that we can trade back or get some value there. But, I mean, the Atlanta Falcons were really in a precarious situation. And Thomas Dimitroff really left this team in a bad situation. A lot of bad contracts, a lot of money invested into not very many players. And Terry Fontenot, he's got his work cut out for him. I mean, he's got a long, long road ahead. And really, I mean, you're kind of strapped for cash. We were talking about the Hawks being strapped for cash, but damn, the Atlanta Falcons are not in good shape. And they're going to have to pay the Piper eventually, and it's going to be rough when they finally do.
Max, what do you think?
Ooh, it's bleak, man. This whole offseason has been pretty bleak.
Also, let's say they may not have to ever pay the Piper. Sorry to cut you off, Max, because the Saints just keep signing people and keep restructuring and signing everybody. So I don't know if that's actually true. I'm not sure if you'll ever.
Hopefully we stole a little bit of that magic with Terry Fondo. I mean, good God.
Well, I kind of thought this was the offseason to sort of pay the Piper and suck it up, take the cap hit, don't keep pushing it down the line and open up your options. I kind of think they're like those quotes about you know, maybe this isn't exactly what Terry Fondo wanted to do, but he kind of had to. Ooh, that's tough. That's just tough to read. Because like that's the only way they could get under the cap. It's just such a team's not competing next year. Like I just don't. That's all I took from it. It's like they're not improving the roster this year. They're not competing next year. I just don't think they're taking a quarterback at four. I know they're trying to put out there that doesn't change anything, yada, yada, yada. I think that's to get people to trade up to four, which is smart. But I don't know what to make of it other than the fact that they're basically soft committing to him for the next 2 years. And if they're soft committing to him the next 2 years, it would be dumb to take a quarterback at four. And you guys know I've been on take a quarterback at four this whole time, but I kind of just assumed they'd be able to move off of Matt Ryan after this year. I don't think that's in the plan as of now. I'll just say it that way.
I don't think it's possible. I mean, a $40 yeah. million dollar cap hit is just dead money. That's just dead money. They would only save $8 million. That's an obscene amount of money. I just don't see how you can justify drafting a quarterback at four. I just don't.
And it's just so frustrating. It's so frustrating because, you know, everyone brings up the Saints as sort of like, you know, finessing the cap to work and signing all these players despite seemingly having no cap space, yada, yada, yada. And those tricks are fine if you're the Saints and you're making the playoffs every year. But it's not fine for a 4-12 team to sort of be like pushing that can down the road. Like you have to just deal with it. And I think that they kind of just don't know whether they want a full reset or not. And the presence of Matt Ryan and Julio Jones makes it tough to like completely nuke it. But man, it just seems like they're making no choice at all. And like, they're just like sitting in that in between that does nobody any good.
Well, I disagree. I don't think that they're a better team than 4-12. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think we talked about this at one point a couple weeks ago. Yeah, they were 4-12, and then they're coming off of 2-7-9 seasons. But I don't blame guys like Matt Ryan and Julio Jones for that. And I think that Arthur Smith, I think, can come. He's an unknown, obviously, so I don't want to put expectations on it necessarily. But, I mean, he could come in, and this team could be dramatically better just overnight. I mean, you saw what Ryan Tannehill was able to do with him. Ryan Tannehill was a wash. The guy was terrible, and then he makes a trip up to Nashville, and all of a sudden he's a Pro Bowl quarterback. And I think Matt Ryan is a significantly better quarterback. I mean, come on, Julio Jones, he's a significantly better player. But I mean, I think it all comes down to what Arthur Smith can do in year one, and I think our tunes will change a little bit if he's able to come in and get results immediately. Then I think most of us would still be comfortable with Matt Ryan and the rest of the company, the core group, because I still think they can compete. I still think this is a playoff team next year if Arthur Smith is as advertised. Can I guarantee that? No, absolutely not.
Let me be clear. I think they can. There's a path to them being a top 10 offense next year, and it's not that hard to see how that happens. Like, Like, the offense could be really good right away. I see no path to this defense being any good at all.
Yeah.
Like at all. And there's not really that much of a path right now in free agency to improve it. I mean, they've signed two guys, very low deals, who are kind of just like depth pieces. And unless they hit on like three or four defenders in the draft, just like hit them out of the park, how is this defense going to be any good?
Which makes it really strange that Dean Pease came back for what, like maybe 1 year for this defense. Like, I don't, unless Dean Pease is just like, even better than advertised, I don't see why he would come back for this 1 year.
Dean Pease has been able to work some incredible magic with not, very not talented rosters. Like, so what he did up in Nashville with Tennessee. I mean, you saw as soon as he left, I mean, the actual talent of that roster was exposed. And it's just the effectiveness of a coordinator. And I think he could potentially come in here and make an impact. I mean, but yeah, like you said, I mean, this team needs to hit in the draft. And that's one of the many reasons why I've been advocating for a trade back. Because most of that defensive talent, unless you're going to jump on Micah Parsons, you can drop to maybe 7. I don't think you can drop really any farther than that, like with the Panthers pick. To take Parsons, who I think is the best defensive player in the draft. But if you want another defensive player, you
if we
can
take
drop
a linebacker
to, like,
in the first round, I think I might blow a bigger blood
Khalil
vessel.
Mack,
than,
Khalil Mack was a linebacker. Von Miller is a linebacker.
I don't think we're calling them linebackers. Those aren't linebackers. Those are edge rushers.
That's how they were listed. That's how they were
they
listed
are edge
when,
rushers.
They, when they came out in the draft. Micah Parsons is an edge rusher. That's what I would draft him to be.
Okay.
I mean, he is an edge rusher. That's what I see him as. But, I mean, I think he's the best defensive player in the draft, but I don't think the Falcons necessarily take him. But, look, there's a ton of, like, middle-round talent. So you go into the first round, second, third round, tons of defensive talent. And I think the Falcons need to trade back. I mean, pick
Max,
up as much capital
we'll
as you
can. Max,
who
do you think will be more upset? Garrett, if the Falcons take a quarterback at 4, or myself at the Falcons trade back and take a defensive guy or an offensive lineman?
Say that again?
Who do you think will be more upset? Who do you think will be more upset based on which way the Falcons go?
Garrett, quarterback. I think no question. After this restructure, especially, that'd be tough. It's just frustrating because, you know, we have this 4th pick, which is really valuable, especially in this draft. But all of the best players in this draft are at positions we don't need. And to sit there at 4 and take anyone at this point, like any of those guys, other than the quarterbacks, would be bad value. So I think they definitely need to trade back. But I also think if you're strictly going on best player available, like, we eventually need to have a conversation about Jamar Chase and Kyle Pitts and definitely Penei Sewell and, like, these guys who seemingly are not at quote-unquote need, because if you're sitting at 4, you cannot take a defensive player in this draft. So I don't know.
No,
I don't know what the path
Penei Sewell is.
I've
warmed up to this
Kyle
significantly.
Pitts, there was a report that floated. A report floated about the Falcons apparently being interested in Kyle Pitts. Did y'all see that?
I saw that.
Maybe like a couple, like an hour ago, something like that. Are they actually interested? I don't know. It's probably a smokescreen. I mean, they're just trying to generate as much interest as possible from anybody for a trade back. It's happening. Take it to the bank.
It'd be fun. It'd be fun to watch. That's all. I could say it'd be fun to watch.
I would love it. I'd be fine with it. I mean, look, you're drafted next Travis Kelce. I'm all in on that. And look, Terry Fontenot, I trust until proven otherwise.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right, guys. Well, that's all I've got today. Is there anything else? No really brave stuff going on yet. We're inching closer and closer to opening day. But, I mean, unless you really have some strong Johan Camargo or Jason Kipnis as the utility guy thoughts, no real brave stuff going on right now.
Well, Ronald Acuna looks like an animal.
Yes.
The dude's playing out of his mind. He's so good.
It's
oh,
good.
God. I'm excited for Braves baseball, man. Yeah. And then do you have any upset picks? I think Colgate was beating Arkansas last I saw, but I think Arkansas came back.
It looks like Florida's going to survive. No, I don't know. Like, I think Winthrop was something I was circling as a upset pick. Michigan for sure going down in round one. I think we can all agree on that front. Tennessee running the table, I think, is a guarantee just Tennessee.
Oh, God.
I think that's something we got to pencil in. Those are my strongest feelings. I don't know about you guys.
I think I have Winthrop in the in one of them I have Winthrop making it to the Sweet 16.
Mm.
Yeah. I think most every year since like 1985 when they expanded, there's been at least one double-digit team in the Sweet 16.
Interesting.
But no, I have Michigan losing round two. Sorry, Max. Mm. To LSU. Mm. I mean, I don't know.
It's gonna be fun. I mean,
it's my favorite time of year.
Max is already having a great weekend based on Michigan State last night. I'm sure he's already okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's all house money from here. As long as we go farther than them, it doesn't really matter.
So all you're going to do is beat Texas Southern. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right, guys. Well, that is all I've got this week. We'll be back next week. Good to have the gang back together. Maybe we'll have some more Falcon stuff unfolding, more defensive signings, the Braves doing some more stuff, the Hawks. Maybe they sweep the LA teams. We'll have that to talk about. We shall see. Stay safe out there, my friends, and we will be back next week.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas Podcast. Rocky Top, let's rock. I don't know. I'm over volcanic takes. Don't like it anymore. I woke up one day, a couple days ago, Ryan, and I was like, done with it. Don't like it. Wrote some stuff down. Wrote Rocky Top, let's rock. It's fun to say out loud, and that is what I'm going with at the moment. Ryan Shumpert of the UT Daily Beacon is here. Ryan, good afternoon. How are you?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
I'm doing well. I hadn't gotten the news on the name change, but it does sound fun to say. I like it. So, it's exciting time, exciting day, and Knoxville. I'm driving through middle of Kentucky right now, going to Indianapolis, ready for an exciting weekend of some Tennessee basketball.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, Ryan. We hope it's an exciting weekend for Tennessee basketball. Let's hope. Let's just start there because ultimately this is what all Tennessee fans are going to be looking at. It's interesting. A friend of mine, once the brackets were revealed a couple days ago, Ryan was like, "Oh, there we should at least be in the Sweet 16." And it's interesting to me when I just talk with other Tennessee fans, and they're so certain about certain. I'm just like, how do you have a strong opinion on where Tennessee? Like, it would not surprise me at all if Tennessee laid an egg this afternoon against Oregon State. Like, they just run the table in the Pac-12. Like, they're a solid team. They both switch a lot on defense. Like, they kind of mirror each other in a lot of ways. But I don't know. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Oregon State beat Tennessee today. It also wouldn't surprise me if Tennessee won big and Keon balled out and this team righted the ship. Like, I don't know. I have no idea. What about you?
I mean, yeah, it's hard. Being certain is about the hardest thing to be with this team. I don't understand how anyone could be certain. Consistency has been the last thing this team's had all year. Now, it does seem like they've put together three straight pretty solid games, albeit take about 5 minutes out of that second half of the Alabama game where they kind of collapsed. But, you know, I guess that's why people are feeling more confident, the three straight, you know, pretty solid performances. But I am with you. It's hard to feel confident or comfortable about anything with this team.
Yeah, I don't get it. So when you think about how this game is going to go today, so there will be some listeners who listen to it after this game happens. What are you looking for? What are some matchups you're intrigued by? How do you think Tennessee matches up with Oregon State? And how do you think this game ultimately unfolds? This is your chance to be clairvoyant, yeah. Ryan.
Yeah, well, I think first you have to like the matchups for Tennessee getting Oregon State. Now, that's certainly a game Tennessee can lose. There's no doubt about that, like we were just saying. But I think you look at – here's the good and the bad, I think, with the matchup. The bad, two good guards for Oregon State, and I think that's the thing you've seen this year. Teams that really just rely on one main guard, Tennessee's done a pretty good job of maybe getting down but containing. Trey Mann last week was probably the one exception of someone that's really been able to go off against them. They've been able to contain guys – when they've been able to rotate Josiah James, Keon Johnson, Jaden Springer on him, throw fresh guys at him. So I think that's maybe the bad two guys shooting the ball well from three right now. We know that's a way you can attack Tennessee. Where I think it may be a little bit of a good matchup is you don't have John Fulkerson, which, you know, there's been nothing official from Tennessee. I'd be a little surprised if he were to play against Oregon State. I think you look at the way Oregon State's bigs, they have Silva, big 7-footer. I think that matches up well for what Tennessee seems like they're moving more towards. Euros Plastis coming off the bench, and that's a matchup I think will help Tennessee. As you saw, the Vols kind of have to play Plastis late against Alabama, and certainly not a good matchup, and he really struggled on the defensive end late in that game.
So what is your gut telling you about how this game will eventually unfold?
I think Tennessee will be up by around 5 in most of the game. Now, I do think they're going to have a patent in 3-4 minute scoring drought at some point. I think it's going to be all about surviving that, and I think they will. I think they win. Honestly, I like the line right at 8. I kind of think that's pretty good. I'd say 8-10 point win for Tennessee.
What do you make of Fulkerson at the moment?
I've lost you again. Okay, now you're back. What were you saying? You cut out again.
Fulkerson. What do you think is going to be the situation for Fulky this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee hasn't said anything on him. I kind of feel doubtful that he plays, especially on Friday. To me, Sunday is where you really need him because, you know, not to look ahead too far, but if you were to get Oklahoma State and Cade Cunningham, I think East Palms is pretty clearly the guy you want to put on the 6'8 Cunningham. Now, I'd imagine Josiah James would run on him too, but then if you don't have Fulkerson, then Pons is going to be forced to guard some bigs. Now, I know Oklahoma State isn't super big, so maybe Tennessee could get flexible with the matchups and play some, you know, Keon or Josiah on the 5. But I think that's where it'll be really big. Tennessee will need Fulkerson, you know, possibly plays by Sunday. You know, I'm kind of on the – I'm going to have to see it to believe it train. But I certainly don't think it's impossible. I mean, obviously no one at the university has rolled him out at this point.
Yeah, I don't know what ultimately happens here, but it's just a bummer because, like, I think this team had really figured it out, and they talked a lot about that layoff at the end of February and beginning of March to get right, and Barnes talked about Vescovi's hip being fully back to normal, and he's hitting threes again. It was just like, oh, things are starting to work out again, and then Fulky gets a devastating double cheap shot against Florida. So when you think about the SEC title, or the SEC championship game the SEC tournament game against Alabama and how that ultimately unfolded. Are you concerned that that is going to linger for this Tennessee basketball team?
Not really. You know, I will admit, I mean, credit to Tennessee. They kind of, you don't see a ton of honesty a lot of times in post game, but players kind of said they got rattled in that stretch. And, you know, I think that may be a little bit of a problem, but I mean, that's just kind of the reality of Tennessee this year. If you give them a lot of ball pressure, there's going to be times where they struggle and they go on few-minute runs where they turn the ball over 4 or 5 times and it really kills them. So that was the big problem against Alabama. You look at that game, Alabama was able to get it to a 1-point game with 12 minutes, and then Tennessee played them even the rest of the way. It was just 1 5-minute stretch that haunted them. But they've had those stretches haunt them all season, so it's hard to think now that that's just going to go away. But the other problem is against Alabama. I still think you have to be encouraged. I really like the way John Johnson's starting to play. You saw him have a great first half, a little bit less, you know, didn't play as well in the second half, but he also had Herb Jones, SEC Defensive Player of the Year, guarding him, who's 2 inches taller than him and really long wingspan. And we obviously know Keon Johnson's not going to shoot a whole lot of jump shots over people. So it was a tough matchup. I like the way he's playing, and I think he'll be key for Tennessee going forward.
The baseball team. We saw the sweep against Georgia State in person a few weeks back, Ryan. But they're still playing well. Top 10 team. The SEC just filling up the top 10 in college baseball this season. What do you make of the walk-off against East Tennessee and the big weekend ahead against Georgia?
Yeah, I mean, talk about – that was one of the ETSU game on Tuesday, I guess it was by far the most exciting midweek game I've watched, and honestly, as exciting as many games I've watched since I've been at Tennessee. And, you know, those ETSU games tend to be intense. They got a lot of Knoxville kids on the ETSU team, a lot of kids who probably would like to be playing at Tennessee. And you're not going to get make the huge deal about a win over ETSU, but I think it just kind of exemplifies. You've seen this team win games a lot of ways, close, coming from behind, low-scoring games, high-scoring games. So you've seen them win in a lot of different ways. You've seen this team play with an attitude, and they've gone on the road, played 5 road games. So I think they're, especially given the fact that they haven't played like a big Big 12 team or ACC program, I think they're about as prepared as you can be going into SEC play this weekend.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. They've been good, and the walk-off was cool. And it was an all-time great bat flip.
Yeah, it was.
I was very much here for it. Also kind of weird that he bats fifth in the lineup with how good he is and where he'll probably get drafted. I don't really understand why he's in the five spot, but that is not my my area of expertise, perhaps. Let's talk about Tennessee football, the wide receiver room. We have a lot of transfers all over the defense, and the offensive line has a lot of key departures. The running back room is just like very, very different than what it looked like a year ago. But the wide receiver room is, I think, a huge position of strength when I think about where we're headed in the fall and like the amount of talent coming back and who's coming in. Yes, Josh Palmer and Brandon Johnson leaving the program will hurt, but you get Walker Merrill, Julian Nixon, Anderson Kobe coming in. You have Velus Jones coming back, which I think is huge. I think he'll be utilized a lot more with this staff. You have Jalen Hyatt, who I think will be used a lot more. Romel Keaton, you and I have talked about like that that miscommunication with him and Garantano all fall, and just the amount of targets that he got that did not come in. So maybe a different quarterback will help. Jimmy Callaway, Jimmy Holiday, Malachi Wideman, Cedric Tillman. What do you make of the wide receiver room? Let's start with the departures. Are you concerned at all about Johnson and Palmer being gone?
I mean, yeah, you think Palmer was Tennessee's best receiver last year and was overall a pretty productive player for him for 3 years, especially given the situation he had at quarterback and on the offensive line. And he's a guy that kind of set the world on fire, I think, in the Senior Bowl. And I think I saw someone this week saying he could go as high as the third round in the NFL draft. So he's a guy that I think is a big loss, but Brandon Johnson a little bit less so. I don't think that's anything Tennessee can't replace. And you're right, there's not a ton of returning production, but there is a lot of returning talent. I think there's stuff to be excited about. And then you especially throw in Josh Heupel and what he can do and what he wants to do with his offense. I think it causes a lot of excitement.
I think so. And Palmer was really good. He was a bucket bomb catcher from Garantana this past year. A lot of down the right-hand side, just little bucket catches, and he was good. Really good in that Georgia game. But the additions, Merrill, Nixon, and Kobe, who are you more excited about?
Well, I got to give a little plug to Walker Merrill, I guess. We went to the same high school. I got to watch him play a couple times in high school. He's a guy that I think could come in and be a slot receiver day one. Nixon was probably, I think, the highest rated of the three, but he had some knee injuries in high school, and I think he's a guy that'd be a little more of a downfield, maybe could work out a red zone option. But to me, I'd say Merrill's maybe the most likely to make an impact. But I think the biggest thing is you look at the sophomores they brought in last year. Obviously, Hyatt played a good amount, but Wideman and then Holiday and Callaway, the two Jimmies, I think those are guys that have a lot of potential, and I think Tennessee needs at least one or two of them to make a jump and be productive players for them this fall.
I agree. The returning guys, Velus Jones, Hyatt, Keaton, Tillman, Callaway, who are you most excited about seeing get another year? And also, who do you think fits? Who do you think of this group, the returning group, is most likely to just really explode under Heupel's new offense?
I think it would be Hyatt, and that's probably just because I think he's the most talented player of the bunch, and you saw him flash at times last year, and you have to think as much as they like to throw the ball down the field, down the sideline in this offense, and the fact that you lose Palmer, who was Tennessee's best person in that regard last year, I think you would have to think Hyatt's going to have a pretty big role there. But Velus Jones is the one that I'm really interested to see. I don't think he'll necessarily be Tennessee's most productive receiver, but he showed flashes last year of being really talented and had some strong games, especially towards the end of the season. I wonder with a little bit new offensive system, maybe a little more receiver friendly. Certainly Tennessee's hoping a quarterback that will be a little bit more receiver friendly. I think Jones could have a real strong year.
All right. Any final things on the wide receiver room? How excited should Tennessee fans feel about it?
Yeah, I think it's the big, you know, there's not, like I said, there's not the returning guys, but there's talent there and there's a lot of bodies. So I think that's something that you can look to in year one under Heupel. There's going to be areas where there's going to be a lot of growing pain and they're not going to be very good. But I think you look at the receiver room, you look at some of the pieces that they have at quarterback, I think there's reasons to think they can be successful there and have some success there from day one. So I certainly think it is an area Tennessee fans should be excited about, not that they're going to come out there and be a top three, top five receiver unit in the SEC, but I definitely think they have talent, and mixed with Heupel's experience and kind of his how he runs his offense, I think there's certainly reasons to be optimistic.
All right, Ryan, what can we check out from you this week at the UT Daily Beacon?
Yeah, so basketball coverage, kind of ending the SEC tournament, looking at what they take from what they did well and what they did poor there, and then we'll have complete coverage this weekend in Indianapolis of Tennessee's first-round matchup against Oregon State, and then if the Vols get past the Beavers, we'll have complete coverage of their second-round matchup against either Oklahoma State or Liberty.
All right. Well, go check out Ryan's great work. Ryan, thank you, as always, for the time, my friend. I'm sure we'll see each other at a baseball game soon, but stay safe out there and enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.